Hare Krishna. It's nice to be here at the Sri Sri Radha Govinda Mandir in Denver. First time, not the first time I've been here, but the first time I've been invited very kindly to speak. So I consider that a great honor, and I thank you for it. In the Mahabharata, which is the greater history of India, it's a story about many things, but about the Pandavas and the Kauravas who are opposing sides. They're actually related families. And the Kauravas were not the legal heirs to the throne, but somehow had gotten hold of the throne. And the Pandavas were the rightful heirs to the throne. I won't go into the whole story because we'd be here a long time. So, after much diplomacy effected by Sri Krishna, that's Krishna up on the altar along with his consort Radha, Krishna tried to broker a peace treaty, but seemingly was unable to do so. And they came to the precipice of war. We're talking about millions of participants in this battle, which actually happened. It's a historical battle that took place about 5,000 years ago in India. Duryodhana was the head of the Kauravas. And he had usurped, well, misappropriated would be the better word, the throne at that time. And they did it through a crooked gambling match. And the Pandavas, the five brothers, were the rightful heirs. Yudhishthira, the oldest brother, would be king, had been king. But the main character is Arjuna. Arjuna was the most gifted warrior, archer, bowsman on the planet at that time. He and Krishna were cousins. More than that, Arjuna had married Krishna's sister, Subhadra. So they were related in that way as well. As Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, that's he, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, has explained that when Krishna was on the planet some 5,000 years ago, even though Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as pointed out in the Vedas, and Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, which I'm going to refer to in a moment, most of the souls who would see Krishna as we see each other now would not know, would not recognize that he was God. In fact, I remember Prabhupada saying that only perhaps a few hundred people maybe knew Krishna was, actually knew he was God, and or accepted that he was God. So it's interesting because we may think, if God appeared to us right now, oh, I'd recognize him right away. I'd know it was him. Would you? How do you know how he would appear? He appears in different forms, at different times, in different millennia, in different ages, for different purposes. How would you recognize him? All right? So Duryodhana, the bad guy in the story, the antagonist, he was going to Krishna to ask a favor, to ask his help, because Krishna was a prince or a king, really, unto himself, who had built a fabulous city just off the coast of Gujarat in India, what is now the Arabian Sea. And Krishna had his own armies, Duryodhana wanted to go and ask Krishna for a favor, to help in the battle. But Krishna was typically on the side of Arjuna, who was the good guy, because they were related and because they went back many, many lifetimes and incarnations together as Nara Narayan Rishi. I won't explain all that. So they both decided to go and ask Krishna a favor. When Duryodhana arrived, he arrived first. And Krishna was asleep on his bed having a nap. And Duryodhana, being full of himself, being an egomaniac, motivated by ego primarily, people who are motivated by ego want to do what? They want to control. They want to manipulate. They want power. Power over people. Not always power on behalf of people, right? So Duryodhana went right to the headboard of his Krishna's bed so that when Krishna would open his eyes, he would be able to ask him right away what it is he wanted him to give him. Before Krishna woke up, Arjuna arrived. Arjuna was not motivated by ego. He was not motivated by self-indulgence or self-serving. He was humble in nature, even though Krishna was his friend. He knew largely who Krishna was. He found out a little bit more once the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, which is about to happen. So Arjuna placed himself at the foot of Krishna's bed. It's considered to be a humble position when you place yourself at the feet of a teacher or somebody who is considered to be a great soul, an honorable person. So then, shortly after, Krishna awakened. And who do you think he saw first? Duryodhana here, or Arjuna at the foot of his bed? Arjuna. Of course he did. And he said, "Oh, Arjuna, why are you here? It's so nice to see you, my friend, my brother-in-law." "Oh, Duryodhana, you're here too. Well, what an auspicious day. Two of the most famous men on the planet, here they are to visit me. Thank you for coming. What can I do for you?" Duryodhana spoke quickly. He says, "Well, we've come here to ask a favor. I've come here to ask a favor, Krishna. You know, this war is going to happen." Krishna says, "Yes, I know. By now it's inevitable. So I've come to ask a favor from you." "Arjuna, why are you here?" "Well, more or less for the same thing. I've also come to ask you a favor, Krishna." "Ah, I see. So what shall I do? You're both here to ask a favor. I guess the first person I gazed upon should be the first person who gets an opportunity to ask the favor," which was Arjuna. "Is Duryodhana. But I was here first, Krishna. I was here first." "Well, you may have been, but I saw Arjuna at the foot of my bed, so." "Arjuna, what is it you want?" "I need your help in the coming battle." "Duryodhana, I need your help in the coming battle." "Oh, okay, same thing." "Okay. I am not going to fight in the coming battle. So the only thing else I can offer you is I can offer you my armies. That's it." And his army had 1,000,000 men. "So Arjuna, what would you wish?" "Well, I wish that you would be with me in the battle." He says, "But I will not fight." He says, "Then come and be my chariot driver." Will you drive my chariot? Will you handle my horses during the battle? But surely you realize I won't pick up a weapon. It does not matter. Because he knows who Krishna is. He doesn't need to pick up a weapon, does he? If he's driving your chariot, does he? Have you got him to drive your chariot yet? Did you ask him? And if not, why not? You should ask. I did. And he says, yes, of course, I will drive your chariot. Duryodhana, I'll take the armies. Then you shall have the armies, my friend, just as you wished. And that was decided. So the battle commenced shortly thereafter. And let's understand one thing here between Arjuna and Duryodhana. Arjuna's motivation always came out of Atma, true self, pure self. When you are acting out of pure self, out of soul, Atma is soul power, the very essence of your being, then you will be acting with respect, with trust, with love. In which situations, my friends? All situations. All. Correct? Duryodhana's motivation was the opposite. He was acting out of ahankar. What is ahankar? Ego. Aham kara, Sanskrit. Kara is doer, aham means I. Hey, look at me. That's ego, right? Let me tell you about me. Hey, why don't we talk about me? That's ahankar. No humility in that. And ahankar or ego acts through mistrust, power, control, vengeance, retribution, vendetta, ... Should we continue? You need some more words? No. That's Duryodhana. On the battlefield, millions of soldiers. The Kauravas, Duryodhana's army, had 11 Akshauhinis. Akshauhini is like a division. They had foot soldiers, they had charioteers, they had elephants, and what am I missing? Cavalry. Correct. Four components. You know the chess game. Chess that people play, it's based on that. There were no bishops on the battlefield, okay? Please. No bishops, no queen. No queens allowed on the battlefield back in those days, okay? Anyway, never mind the chess game. So Arjuna said to Krishna, who was driving the chariot, please, draw my chariot up through the two armies. I want to see who has come to fight. And we're talking extensive amounts of men on both sides. Warriors, kings, Maharathas, Atiratas are warriors, charioteers who could fight hundreds of men against the hundreds of men simultaneously. Phenomenal warriors. And Arjuna saw on the opposite side family members, his guru, Tyrone. His guru. His uncles. His friends. Loved ones. People he's known since he was a child. On the opposing side. The thing we learned from Bhagavad Gita, which Krishna spoke to Arjuna in about 2 minutes from now, in real time, is Dharma. What is Dharma? Dharma is probably the most wonderful word next to Krishna. Dharma means duty, obligation. It means truth, it means justice, it means fairness, it means right. It means honesty and integrity, it means doing the right thing for the right reason. It means your fundamental nature, your very essence, is your dharma. To act in harmony with your nature. To carry out your duties and your obligations is dharma. To neglect your duty is adharma. So Arjuna's job, his dharma, his duty was to do what? To fight the battle, to regain the kingdom. Not on behalf of himself, on behalf of his brothers and his older brother Yudhishthira, the rightful heir. But when he saw who had come to fight and how he knew all these people, he became overwhelmed. He said he felt the limbs of his body quivering and his mouth drying up. That's what he had said to Krishna. He dropped his bow and arrows on the floor of the chariot. He said, I can't fight. I can't fight. I can't do this. What do you mean you can't do this? Krishna says, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. A man whose essence is to carry out his dharma. Is it easy to carry out your dharma, your duty, to do what you feel you've come here to do in this lifetime? Is that an easy thing for us? How many of us even know what our dharma is in this lifetime? How many of you are clear on what your dharma is, why you are here, and what you're here to do in this lifetime? Raise your hands. One, two, come on. You shy ones. Three, four, five, six, seven. You see, honestly, most people are not. Those of you who put up your hand and are clear on what your dharma is, what your life purpose is in this lifetime, how many of you are now carrying it out as we speak? Put your hand up. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Oh, the numbers are getting bigger. Eight. You see, it's not that easy to do. But when you're clear on it, finally, for me, I had an awakening at age 19, a spiritual awakening. By 21, I knew the most important thing in my life was to dedicate it to God. There's no question. By 22, I read the Bhagavad Gita and became a devotee in my heart. But I still didn't know. I mean, I know my higher dharma, the higher purpose, is to serve God. I always knew that. But what am I meant to do in this lifetime to carry out that purpose as an individual? This is very important for us as well, is it not? You've all felt that at some time. I never figured that out till I was 33. And then I started doing it right away, right? No. I didn't start doing it till I was 39 or 40. You know, bits and pieces along the way, of course. It took me that long to finally, you know, get in sync. And I was going in a different direction until Krishna said, let's give him a bit of adjustment. And Krishna took the reins of the chair and went, okay, here we go. And off we went in a different direction. And I'm in the back. Ooh, here we go. Okay, let's try this. Then all of a sudden everything took off. Dharma. What's your dharma? Who's driving your chariot, my friends? You? No offense. I'm sure there's some wonderful people here. I have no doubt about it. Would I put the reins of the chariot in your hands? Your own chariot? I'm not so sure about that. Because you may not have the perspective that you need. The perspective that Krishna will give you. The perspective that a spiritual viewpoint or a spiritual perspective from way, way up here, not down here where we are, you know, walking around the planet like we're walking around. Right? Up there. You know how this works, right? This is the vertical line. Pardon me, the horizontal line. This is the earth. We're all walking around the earth doing horizontal things like humans do. And we're busy using our egos and our decision-making power and our will and our desires. Those desires. Head wreckers, those desires sometimes. And they get in the way of everything. I thought that desire was my purpose. How wrong I was. Right? This is the horizontal level. Then there's a vertical level. That's the one we forget. The vertical level is to invoke the divine to come down and intersect for you on this plane. You see this symbol, my friends? Do you recognize it? What is it? The cross. That's what the cross is. That's what it means. I don't care what religion you're with. That's what it means. And if you don't bring this down, you're just one of these guys walking around on the earth. No offense. Not very exciting. You want to really take a bite out of life? You want to watch your life transform, become a charmed life and a magical life? And a life you couldn't possibly orchestrate on your own, no matter how wonderfully orchestrational you can be? Then ask Krishna to drive your chariot. Just like our friend Arjuna did. Yeah? So, here's Arjuna. I can't do it. Can't do my dharma. Now, if Arjuna is standing next to God and God's driving his chariot and he can't do his dharma, can't do his duty, where does that leave us? We're not him. Yeah? So what happened? Finally, Arjuna surrenders. And says, I can't do it, Krishna, I'm not going to do it. And now I'm a soul surrendered unto you. This is the key point in the Bhagavad Gita. Now I am a soul surrendered unto you. Two words. Please instruct me. Two words. Please instruct me. And then it began. And from that point forward, you have the entire Bhagavad Gita The whole science of yoga and God realization, self-realization, all contained, start to finish, from that point forward. Chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, text 7. It's all there. That's what we have to do. So, please instruct me means now I'm ready to learn. And if you're not ready to learn, how can you learn anything? If you go into a classroom and you're not humble, open, and expectant, how can you learn? You can't. So because Arjuna went through this catharsis, guess what? We got the Bhagavad Gita. And this is 5,000 years later, my friends. And that book is just as vital today as it was when I read it when I was 22. Out in the middle of a lake on my dinghy. And I row up to the middle of the lake. And I'd sit there in the summer sun and read Bhagavad Gita. 1 July. That's what I did. Changed my life. So, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in another place, he says to Arjuna, in other words, why is he going to instruct Arjuna? 2 reasons. He says, Bhakto si me sakha chiti. Bhakto si me sakha chiti. Because you were my devotee and my friend. If you're a devotee and you're already devoted or focused on Krishna, you've surrendered yourself, wonderful. You may say, yeah, but I'm not there. Then just make Krishna your friend. Start with friendship. How do you start with other people? Friendship. Don't we all start with friendship? Hi, how are you? What's your name? Same thing with Krishna. Okay. So, a few more minutes, yeah? Good. Now let's look at what is true Dharma. I've done Vedic astrology for 42 years around the world. And in Vedic astrology, there's lots of knowledge, but there's a category. And it's about moon's constellation. I'll keep it simple. Constellations of the moon are 27 in number. And when you're born, we calculate your birth chart and your lunar or moon constellation. The constellations are not the same as they are in the Greek tradition. They have very different names. They're Sanskrit names. And very, very different meanings. They have 3 categories. 27 divided by 3 is 3 times 9 is 27. They are Raksha, Nara, and Deva. Raksha, Nara, Deva. Raksha, or let's start with Nara in the middle. Nara means human. Sometimes they use the term manushya. Human. What are humans? Well, we're humans. Humans are self-interested, generally speaking. They want to fulfill desires. They want to get married. They want to have a family. They want to buy some things like a house, a car. And, you know, human stuff. Is there a problem with that? No, not really. Humans generally do not want to harm anybody else. They want to achieve their desires, their ends, not necessarily by harming others. But their focus is mostly on themselves and by extrapolation, say, their families or perhaps their community. Below that is Rakshasa. Rakshasa literally means demon, but we can't say it quite like that. Rakshasa means, please, unevolved, not evolved, thanks, not developed. These are people who are self-interested at all costs, who would resort to manipulation, intimidation, control, like Duryodhana. At any means, I will get what I want. It would include the criminal element as well. That doesn't mean that people who have a Rakshasa constellation are necessarily criminals. It's just a category. It's people who need more refinement. The highest level is Deva. Godly, godlike, spiritual. Deva, Nara, Rakshasa. The root of the word Deva in Sanskrit is Div. Do you know what Div means? Anybody?
Divine.
That's the English. It means literally to shine. Div means to shine. And from there we get, as you say, divine, divinity, divination in English. And we get Deva, which means demigod, or Devi, demigoddess. A being who shines. Right? Do you see these pictures painted of saintly people? Christian tradition the same. What do they have over their heads, around their heads? The halo, the aura. Do they actually have that in real life? Oh yeah, they do. They do. They begin to shine and shine brighter and brighter. You've seen them. You see devotees here. Some of them shine beautifully. So that's Deva. What are Deva people interested in? They're interested in making a contribution to the world, to make the world a better place. That they want to do things, yes, for themselves, but they want to do things that are going to support everybody else. That's a Deva. An enlightened being. A being searching for enlightenment. Right? So, our job as humans here, largely, we're here for two things. One, to fulfill desires, but you do not need me to tell you that, my friends. You've known that since you came out of the womb. Secondarily, we are here to evolve, to grow, to expand, to progress, to become better, are we not? Sometimes we will plateau. We can't grow all the time. And you can plateau for a while, but then you gotta, you know, get back together and grow some more. Sometimes we may even regress. Oop. Going backwards. Then we really gotta shake ourselves out of it, right? Takes a bit of an effort. Get back on it. Get back on the path. Right? We're humans. So Deva, if you're a Rakshasa, if you're unrefined and undeveloped, then your job is to take yourself to the next level. Or the animal instinct is supposed to be let go of. To come up to the human level. The human instinct is then supposed to be let go of to come up to the Deva level. That's why we're here. Okay, so Duryodhana is an alpha male who established a pecking order and demanded obedience. He's acting out of ego. People like that use people. He dragged his entire family into this war. Duryodhana was one of 100 brothers. 100. And all of them were killed in that battle. All of them. For those of you who know the Ramayana, Ravana was the same in the Ramayana. He was the bad guy in the Ramayana who had his brought in his children, his grown children, and his brothers, and sacrificed. These people will sacrifice their whole family to meet their ends. So Dharma is the journey from a Ravana mindset or Duryodhana mindset to an enlightened mindset. So Arjuna needs to get turned around by Krishna. Arjuna even suggests at one point, I can't fight Krishna, I'm just going to go to the forest and meditate and practice yoga. And Krishna says, excuse me? You, Arjuna? You're the most renowned warrior on the planet. You've been living like a king and a prince for most of your life, and now you're going to go to the forest and practice yoga. So you're just going to toddle off this battlefield with all these great warriors around you. They're going to watch you go with your tail between your legs and go, oh, he's going to practice yoga now. You can't do that if you're a warrior, can you now? We all know that. That's cowardice. That's how it would be seen. You have to fulfill the Dharma. So, we have also an interesting approach sometimes. We talk about Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. You know Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, yeah? Brahma is the creator. He's created all life within each universe. Each universe has a Brahma. There are millions of universes. Here's a news flash. Life doesn't only take place on the planet Earth. I know you weren't ready for that, but I have to tell you. Millions of universes, billions of planets, okay? So Brahma is the person who assumes the role of the creator and creates all the diversity of life within each universe. Then we have Vishnu. Vishnu and Krishna are the same thing, essentially. Vishnu is the forearm form. Vishnu means he who pervades everything. And Krishna means the most beautiful, the most attractive form of the Godhead. That's why we like Krishna. And he's very informal, and he's fun, and he likes to sing and dance and play music and take care of the cows. He's a lovely guy. And we love him. So Krishna mindset or the Vishnu mindset, we'll get to that. And then we have Shiva. Shiva, the great yogi. That's Shiva. That's what he's doing. Up in Kailas, or up in the high Himalaya. He's meditating. Does he want to get involved in all this? Not really. Not really. So the Brahma mindset is the creator, controller, orchestrator who's trying to get everybody to do what he wants them to do now that he's created all this diversity. So some people will go along with it, and some people, guess what? They won't. Right? So then, therefore, he has to struggle with them and get them to do what he wants them to do, because that's what they must do, because that's what he wants. Does that always work, that kind of approach, do you think? No. Vishnu, or Krishna, is here to assist, to control none of you. God doesn't want to control you. If God is love, and Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and what we practice here is bhakti yoga, the yoga of love and devotion, a reciprocal relationship with God. If you're trying to control people, is that a symptom of love? I will get you to love me if it's the last thing I ever do. Oh yeah, that's really attractive. I can't wait to love you. Well, what'll happen next? Yeah. No. Vishnu controls nothing and nobody, nor does Krishna. We're just here to help, to encourage, to promote, to inspire, to motivate, to guide. That's Krishna's approach. And Shiva, he is the most detached of them all. And Shiva really doesn't want to get involved. You know, you know, some of you are like, it's the Shiva mindset. Yeah, you know, man, I just don't really want to get into it, you know. I don't want to go mainstream. Doesn't work for me. I don't want to join the rat race. I see it. It's not attractive. Right? That's the Shiva mindset. Well, you going to find fault with him? Well, they're not hurting anybody. They're not hurting you. But he's not doing what I want him to do. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to crush him until he does it, or what? So those are the three approaches we can take to things. And, of course, we recommend the Vishnu mindset. So we live and let live and accept people from where they're at. We don't say people have to be here in order for us to do anything to make progress. No, it's wherever you are. Oh, you're here? Oh, great. Let's go from here. Where else are we going to go from? Can't go from there, can we? So, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana bhavamad bhakto manyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosi me. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage to me. When Krishna says worship me, what does he mean? The fundamental meaning of worship is gratitude, my friends. Everything we have in this world, which is made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and all the elements combined in all these wonderful ways, is given to us free of charge by God. There it is. It's ours for the taking, for the using, hopefully not for exploitation. We won't even get into that subject. It's all there for us. So all we have to be is what? Grateful. How can you not be grateful for all this that's been given to us? And the freedom that we have free will, all of us. We're free to take any path, any road, do anything we want to do, good, bad, in between. People get angry at God. Why did he make a world like this? Well, I didn't make it. I just gave this bunch freedom. I gave him free will. Don't look at me. God didn't manipulate this. This is your desires in action. So he says, thus you will come to me. If you worship me, become my devotee. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Who wants to be your friend more than anybody? Krishna does. You're going to say, come on, man, he doesn't even know me. He's in your heart. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. I am situated in the hearts of all beings. Hello. He wants to be your friend more than anyone. And you're looking, let me see if I can find a friend find something interesting to do out here. Dude. Come on. Pull it in. Take a look. He's waiting. He's waiting, waiting, waiting. How many lifetimes will you keep him waiting? How many? Come on, you're on your 1,000th lifetime. You're on your 1,500th lifetime. And you're lucky you got a human birth this lifetime. I don't even know what I'm doing here. We all have a chance now, don't we? We all do. Bahunam janmanam ante janavam mamprapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, this is Krishna speaking, not me. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. Knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Everything. Such a great soul is very rare. Muy, muy raro. So, then Krishna said, after he explains it all to him, he says, Anusmara mam yidya cha. I think that was the line. He says, now that I've explained the whole science of yoga to you, go and fight. Go now and do your duty. What are you waiting for? Arjuna took up his bow, his arrows. The battle began. It lasted 18 days. Millions were killed, not thousands, millions. And the Pandavas won. And at the end, Arjuna thanked Krishna and said, please, Krishna, I'll get down from the chariot. Krishna said, no. You step down, please. First. Arjuna stepped off the chariot. Krishna dropped the reins down and stepped off the chariot, and the chariot just went up into flames. It just completely exploded, imploded into flames. Burned up the horses, the weapons, the chariot, the wheels, the everything. Gone. Arjuna was, what just happened? Krishna said, I told you I wouldn't fight. But if I was not sitting on that chariot, you'd be dead many times over. I was holding all of those weapons in abeyance until you got down from the chariot. That's what happened. So if he would hold that for Arjuna, what will he hold for you, my friends? If you'd give him your life and your chariot to drive. I'll leave you with one last thought about love. Only a powerful soul can offer love. If we are weak, we become selfish. If we are empty, we can only take. But if we are filled with love, we will automatically give to all. Thank you for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.